This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
But for us, we wanted to create the most sustainable town, new town, that's ever been developed in the country.
We go inside America's first solar town, Babcock Ranch, right here in the Sunshine State.
We have autonomous vehicles. We have two autonomous shuttles that are in place. We have a partnership with Transdev. We have fiber to every home, a gigabit to literally every home and business.
Plus, conservation groups urge more funding to fix Florida's wildlife crisis.
They're under a lot of threats and pressures. And, you know, one is invasive species. Burmese python in southern Florida, you know, eating its way through the small mammal population.
And some facts about President Donald Trump's latest Twitter tirade against DACA. All that and more coming up on episode 143 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. President Donald Trump has kicked off this week with an Easter Sunday tweet against DACA. He has said that there will be no DACA deal. So here's the background. The Trump administration announced last year it was ending DACA, an Obama-era program that allows certain immigrants brought into the country illegally as children to live and work in the U.S. without fear of deportation. But during that time, Congress has been unable to reach an agreement on a long-term solution. The Trump administration proposed offering a pathway to citizenship for 1.8 million immigrants, many of whom benefit from DACA, coupled with $25 billion for the border security and changes to legal immigration programs.
I really believe they're going to come up with a solution to the DACA problem, which has been going on for a long time, and maybe beyond that, immigration as a whole. But any solution has to include the wall, because without the wall, it all doesn't work.
The proposal failed. A federal court issued a ruling earlier this year blocking the Trump administration from ending DACA. The Supreme Court last month declined to hear the administration's challenge on the matter, meaning the program will remain in place while the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals continues its review. So Trump's Twitter tirade pretty much came out of nowhere. No one was talking about DACA during this Easter weekend. And in his tweet, claiming that there are caravans of people coming into the country and that border agents are not allowed to properly do their job and it's getting more dangerous and Republicans must go nuclear on the issue, it's all not true. The fact is, new arrivals are not eligible for DACA. So his tweet doesn't make sense. To be eligible for DACA, applicants must have lived in the U.S. since 2007 and have arrived before age 16 and have been younger than 31 in June of 2012. So the tweet, likely triggered from a Fox News report, has many scratching their heads. Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Leighton, a supporter of immigration reform who represents Miami and is retiring this year, took a sarcastic approach to Trump's Twitter rant with her own. Quote, such a strong message of love and new beginnings from real Donald Trump on Easter Sunday. All right, turning to some Florida news when it comes to unions. And this is reported by John Kennedy with Gatehouse Media. A provision tucked into a sweeping education proposal recently signed into law by Governor Rick Scott requires local unions to have a majority of a county's eligible teachers as dues-paying members or face possible decertification as a collective bargaining unit. Well, what is happening? While the new law appeared threatening, the Florida Education Association said it's turning into a rallying point for recruiting in union members, which has already added some 3,200 members statewide in the past 9 months. So, to learn more, follow John Kennedy's reporting in Gatehouse Media. I remember covering this story, and the original bill, the bill with this issue alone, was struggling. It didn't make it through. Republicans refused to go along with the broader union bill. So what happened? It was tucked into the education bill. Just that portion. So before we start talking about sunshine, let's talk about the governor's race. Are people talking about the governor's race? Sure, not people like me who cover this stuff, but the public. I came across a fun segment by the Tampa Bay Times. Reporter Kirby Wilson went to the streets and asked why they aren't so tuned in to the governor's race just yet.
Recent polling has shown that the vast majority of even likely primary voters haven't picked a candidate yet. And at least one poll indicates that the vast majority of voters don't know enough about any candidate to make a judgment. So I want to talk to some Florida voters around Tampa Bay today to get their impressions on the race. But I also want to answer one question. We're 5 months away from the primary. Should someone know something about the governor's race at this stage? What have you been hearing about the Florida governor's race, Scott?
Not much, honestly.
Have you been following anything about the governor's race?
Not too much,
no. Not too much. What do you make of the sort of, like, years-long campaigns that these candidates undergo in order to reach the governor's mansion?
It's just like when you were running for class president. You put all your efforts into it. You didn't have money at the time, you were in school, but you put all your efforts into it, you handed out your candies, you put pins on people's shirts. It made a difference. Everyone knew your image, everyone knew what you were about.
I think it's important to get the name at least out there, just so it maybe is more familiar to the voter.
I don't think he should be campaigning for longer than a year. I mean, you know.
Why not?
Doesn't seem very, I don't know, it just seems like there's a lot of money involved in it.
Like, do you think people should be engaged right now?
Pretty soon, for sure. Pretty soon, for sure, yes.
Do you plan to read more as we get closer to the election, or what's your game plan?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll brush up on the candidates and, you know, make a educated decision, but as of now, I haven't really, done too much research into it, so we shall see, I guess.
All right, that's Kirby Wilson with the Tampa Bay Times. You're listening to The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. So let's switch gears here and look into the future, where some say it's happening right now. One brand new Florida town has taken its first steps toward becoming completely solar powered. Babcock Ranch, just north of Fort Myers, already has residents moving in and businesses looking to get in on the action. The town's developers hope its success will keep the federal government from imposing high tariffs on solar energy and keep the energy source in private hands rather than government controlled. Babcock Ranch developer Sid Kitson says Florida has done a good job of embracing solar energy. He joins me here on the program.
I think the state of Florida has really, over the last several years, realized that it's a sunshine state and that this is a great opportunity for a renewable energy source for the state of Florida.
This wasn't always the case. Nevertheless, Sid Kitson moved forward with his plans to build his vision of the future.
We wanted to create the most sustainable new town that's ever been developed in the country. And just to put it in perspective, we're going to be building just under 20,000 homes and 6 million square feet of retail and office space. So for us, energy was a key component of that sustainability. And we're very fortunate to have a partnership with Florida Power and Light, where they have already built, so it's already up and running, a 75 megawatt solar power generating facility. It's right on our property, where the solar energy comes directly into our town and powers our town. And so whenever the excess energy from it then goes into the grid. But one thing that's really unique about this also is that they've also put into a place and installed 10 megawatts of battery storage. And it's the largest in the world of solar to battery energy storage, and something that we hope will grow over time so that eventually we'll be able to power the entire town with solar energy because of these solar batteries 24 hours. And so we're well on our way to doing that. So it's very exciting what we have in place right now.
Kitson says the land for the ranch was purchased in 2006, and more than 90% of it is being preserved for wildlife.
When we purchased 91,000 acres, That's 143 square miles. And then we sold 73,000 acres to the state of Florida in the largest land purchase in the history of the state. And then we ended up with 18,000 acres, and out of the 18,000 acres, we're actually going to preserve half of that. So at the end of the day, 90% of the original ranch is in preservation forever. So we're very proud of that.
President Donald Trump imposed tariffs on solar panels made outside of the U.S. earlier this year, although opponents say that could cost thousands of jobs and billions of investment dollars for the solar industry.
So I think from a policy perspective, it's becoming, I think, easier for companies, particularly on a utility scale, to offer solar energy. From a national perspective, we've got to be careful. What the way that we want this to work, I think people in the industry, is to not have to rely on government subsidies or tax credits. We very much like this to be work in the private sector, because then it really becomes something that it's truly financially viable, and that's what we're out to prove. So when it comes to tariffs or other policies that create a more expensive proposition, if you will, compared to other forms of energy, that can be problematic. So we hope that over the not only the short term but the long term, that people will see the benefits of solar energy and that of having an open marketplace. And by the way, here in the United States, I mean, we want to encourage companies in the United States to build solar panels and solar technologies, and I think that's happening.
Well, I would like to have solar on my roof, but it seems so expensive right now.
It is. I think for individual homes, it does become expensive, and that quote payout can be difficult. So economically, it is challenging, but on a utility scale, it's much easier. When people move to Babcock Ranch, one of the big questions we get is what does this mean? It doesn't mean our rates are more expensive. They're less expensive. Is it free? Is it, and really it's very simple. The rates that they pay are exactly the same as everybody else in the Florida Power and Light area. So we pay the same as their other customers pay. The difference is that the energy, when they turn on a light switch in their home, it's solar energy. And so for us, it's about what's right for, the future of our country. It's the future of the state of Florida. It's about sustainability and doing what's right, right now for the environment.
Kitson says Babcock Ranch should see about 250 families moving into the area within the year. And home prices were set to attract a wide range of buyers.
I'm glad you asked that question. We have homes priced anywhere from the high ones, low 200,000s, up to $1 million. I mean, what we're trying to do is create a full stratification of pricing and products for people to move into Babcock Ranch. And we're starting to offer different types of products. Right now, we have a lot of single-family homes. We're starting to offer multifamily. We eventually will have apartments for rent, and we'll have large lot single, small lot single. So there'll be a whole variety. We're even going to have assisted living and independent living. For us, it's very important that it's multi-generational, and in order for it to be multi-generational, you have to have those types of products that are attractive to all generations.
Special thanks to Sid Kitson, Chairman and CEO of Kitson & Partners. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. So please send your generous contributions to rotundapodcast.com and follow us at Rotunda Podcast. You can find us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. Conservationists are sounding the alarm over a new report showing one-third of species in the U.S. are vulnerable to extinction. Groups right here in Florida say that can change by adequately funding the state's Wildlife Action Plan. The report shows many wildlife species are in danger of being wiped out if steps aren't taken to conserve and protect their habitat. Manly Fuller with the Florida Wildlife Federation says state officials have a comprehensive plan to do just that, but it's just a plan without any dedicated funding to implement it, and the state's wildlife is under siege from habitat loss, disease, and more.
They're under a lot of threats and pressures. And, you know, one is invasive species. You know, Burmese python in southern Florida, you know, eating its way through the small mammal population. And there are others, the red lionfish all along our coast, that they're consuming native reef fish in high numbers. So the old world climbing fern down in the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge. You need money to manage that highly invasive plant, which is devastating to the habitat there. So there are many other examples there. We need to maintain our scrub jay populations. You have to really have a regular and robust burning program in their habitat to maintain the kind of habitat that they require. I could go on and on, but the purpose of the report is to point out that there's a lot that can be done through implementation of the state wildlife action plans, and Florida has one, but it needs money to help pay to meet those conservation goals and objectives of these different species to help improve their populations.
The report by the National Wildlife Federation, American Fisheries Society, and the Wildlife Society says America's wildlife crisis can be reversed and includes success stories of places that have received adequate funding, from the reintroduction of Canada lynx in Colorado and wood bison in Alaska. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission lists more than 1,000 wildlife species at risk statewide, including the Florida black bear, the manatee, and the Florida mouse. Special thanks to Manly Fuller with the Florida Wildlife Federation for stopping by the program. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And as always, be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.